supposed to be in the course that trains them to do this, but then Corona hits, they didn't do training, but he's still listed in the course. Wow. So I said, is that safe? He said, no. He said, I'm going to learn on the job. I said, we're going to dedicate this year to you and all of Chayalei Yisrael's success in protecting Am Yisrael. So,
was he the only one here who was called in?
He's in Golani, and then after Golani, he signed up for the course, which does house-to-house fighting in enemy terrain. Amir Shlomo Ben Sharona, together with all Chayalei Yisrael. We learned the Shev Shmaisa yesterday, who made the beautiful diuk in the word Chaim. When the Torah says Nishmat Chaim, it's referring to the Neshama being alive. Because the Neshama can be alive and the Neshama cannot be alive. A non-alive Neshama is the Neshama that's not fulfilling its potential, is not fulfilling its mission. It's just static, like it was when it was close to Hashem initially before it came down into the world. And the live Neshama is a Neshama who is inside a person who's fulfilling mitzvot and growing and developing. As the pasuk says, Eile ha-mitzvot asher yaseh ata adam v'chai behem. When a person is doing mitzvot, he brings the neshama to life. And that's the sod ha-gadol of our creation and being specifically here in this world, that we're able to bring ourselves life. The neshama in the source of where it is not able to influence itself. But down here in this world, it's able to bring extra kedusha as if it becomes a wellspring in and of itself. Not that it just has to receive from others, but it can generate itself. Imki bevadai gam ha-be'er eino shoevet memeha me'atzma. That even a well doesn't create its own water, of course. Right? It's able to produce and produce more water, but the creation of the water comes from a deeper place. So too, when we're here in this world, we're not creating our own kedusha. It's obviously emanating from Hashem, but we're able to keep the water flowing and to be alive in that sense. We have a sense of like we're doing it, we're part of it. We don't feel a shame or embarrassment and we're not stuck. So we have a new light now into our own avodah. The whole purpose of us being in this world is to be independent. And just like a child's whole mission when it's very young is to be independent. And he wrote Selavad. I want to do it by myself. Whatever the child's stage is at, he always wants to be doing everything by himself. When he's a very young age, he wants to be drinking from a bottle by himself and feeding himself. And, you know, he doesn't clean up after himself. But he does try and feed himself. And then when he gets to an older age, like the teenagers, then he wants his own opinion of hashkafa, and he wants his own opinion of dress sense. But the whole stage of development, first physically and then hashkafically, is all about being independent, doing it myself. And that's the essence of what we came down to this world for. Where the neshama will be independent. It won't be just receiving from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have Kedusha, but rather it will be doing mitzvahs, it will be learning Torah, and the neshama will be generating its own Kedusha. That's the essence of what we're here for. And as we become more and more Talmid Chachamim, and we start generating Torah, and thinking of our own Chidushei Torah, and thinking of our own unique relationship with Torah, that's where you start to feel a real sense of specialness and closeness to Hashem. Because you are now generating that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not just Him feeding you, not Him telling you what to do. Rather, you're finding your unique chelik in Torah. That's why we say at the end of davening every day, "V'tein chelkeinu b'toratecha." There's two ways to understand that tefillah. The simple way of understanding it, and that's probably more the pshat in the context there, is that we're davening for the future, when the Beis HaMikdash is built, and we're asking that we won't have to work, rather the goyim will take over the work for us, and we'll be able to spend days and nights learning. V'tein chelkeinu b'toratecha. May our chelek be learning. That's what we want our chelek to be. That's the pshat. There's another interpretation, which is, everyone has their own unique chelek in Torah. And what we're davening for is, Hashem, may I not copy other people on their derech halimut. May I not try and copy other people on their derech of avodus Hashem. Rather, tein chelkeinu, everyone is asking for their own, to discover their own unique chelek. They will serve Hashem in their own authentic way and not be serving Hashem by copying other people in their way. Tein chelkeinu, may I find my own unique chelik in Torah. So we're going a little deeper now, more than we've done in the whole book until now. We're on page 136, and we're going deeper now than we've done in the first 135 pages. Because until now, we were talking in a very general sense, and now we're starting to discover the self. Ein ha'ani rak osef tuguvot al ha'mitrochesh michutzalo. And we're not defining the self just by all the ways you respond to external things, which we would call the reactive self. Right? How do I react to other things? We're not just talking about the reactive self. But rather the self has a self independent. I'll just try and describe that. You know, when a couple gets married, they have a child, another child, Baruch Hashem, a big family. And a lot of the discussion that goes on between the couple is about the children. Who's going to pick them up? How are they doing emotionally? What's their plans for the future? Da-da-da. Eventually, the last child gets married. Yes, fast forward quite a bit. And the parents come home from the wedding, and now what? Now what? So there are some parents who immediately get involved in the grandchildren. Right? And if it's a big enough family, it works out well. You know, by the time the last child gets married, they've already got big enough grandchildren, everything flows. But what happens if they don't already have grandchildren, or they decide, we can be grandparents, but that doesn't have to be a full-time profession? They suddenly discover that they have a relationship outside of their children. And some couples, that scares them a lot. Because they've never invested in their relationship other than being partners and raising their children. That's very scary. A couple has to have a relationship independent of their children. They develop a love and a connection outside just of the technical, we're involved in the child raising. Of course, their main interaction will always be their children. That's a major part of why they got married to begin with. That's their role in the world. Peruva Ravu, to continue the generations going and to teach Hashem's Torah over to each future generation. That's of course a major thing. But what about the Vadavak B'Ishto? And you have a relationship, husband and wife, develop a connection. What about that? Some parents, that scares them suddenly. They realize that they don't have any connection outside of their children. And therefore, you know, looking forward, it's very important that when you do get married and you do have children, you always make sure you have time, which is you as a couple and not just you as parents. It's important to have both of those. Obviously, the other extreme is also unhealthy, where you don't care about your kids. Right? Don't go to either extreme. It's also true, maybe even a little more relevant now, the same idea is also true when you get engaged. The same thing exactly. When a couple gets engaged, then they get very involved in the details of the wedding. Depends. Sometimes the parents totally take over and the couple don't have anything to do with it. But often they are involved. And then it all gets, where are we going to get married? Let's choose a hall, catering, the photographer, the band. And like, they get engaged and a lot of the discussion is all technical. And by the time they come to the chuppah, they don't even really remember who they are, who they're getting married to. It's my, you know, my wedding planning partner. That's who it is. But what about our connection? So there again, the same idea. It's very important that, of course, you do get involved in all the preparing for the wedding, but you have to make sure there are certain times that you meet that are independent of that. Where you just meet to develop and deepen the connection. So when we come to discover the self, there's obviously a lot of element of the self, which is how I connect to my friend and how I connect to my parents and what is my response to. That's all very important. There also has to be an element of the self, which is who am I by myself? Not only who am I as a. Now, who am I as A is very important. That's a major tool of discovering yourself. How am I as a child? How am I as a friend? How am I as a parent when you get to that stage? That's a very important, you know, I didn't mention siblings. I'm not, yeah. How have I would have been? I'm an only child, so I forgot that one. How am I as a sibling, as a brother? Right. So that's definitely a major way of discovering who you are, but there's also an important question of who am I as a self? Who am I outside? And what we're coming to discover here is discovering one's own inner self, not only in the context of how you connect to other people. Because when you connect to other people, it's not only who are you, but it's who are you in respect to them. And that's not necessarily the real you. It's you, when you're related to that person, you behave according to how what they expect from you, and you know, you adapt yourself slightly. And sometimes some people, they find themselves to be totally different with different people. When I'm with my family, I'm like this. And when I'm with my friends, like this. And when I'm with my Rebbe, I'm like this. And when I'm with this friend, I'm like this. And that other friend, I'm totally different. So who's the real self? They don't even know. Because they're only a reactive self. Who am I in respect to that person? And what we're trying to do here is to discover the core self. Who am I not in respect? That's the same idea as the going out, the being engaged, the same idea as being a parent. You have the self in respect to something else, the children or the wedding, but you also have a self in respect to the self. And we're trying to discover that. Most people are totally unaware of this inner self. They never thought to develop it or discover it. Of course, it affects them in a major way. Something that doesn't exist, and it definitely exists, but they're just not conscious of it. They're not aware of who am I in respect to myself. Rov b'nei Adam chayim et chayim bekivun el olam ha-chitzoni. Most people, the way they view themselves is on an external level. If you ask them, how are you doing? They'll tell you how they're doing physically, which is the normal answer. I have a cold, I have a headache. That's what they'll answer you, how are you doing? And if you answer, and how are you doing? They'll say, what do you want from me? They're like, what do you want? Well, you want me to look deeply into my inner self and say what I'm doing? What does that mean? I told you I have a cold. That's what I'm doing. Yeah, that's who I am. Most people, when they discuss themselves, they discuss it on that level. And okay, that's not a true reflection, because you know when you're walking past someone in the corridor and they ask how are you, they're not asking about your essence. They're probably asking about how your health is. But even if you sit in a room on a one-to-one with someone who you want to open your inner world, and they ask how are you, you'll probably still answer. Although you probably know that's not what he means, but you probably still answer like, what do you mean? Like, what are you looking for? Because you won't know deeply who am I or what am I about. So unfortunately, most people are scared to turn over that inner world, even for a moment. There's once a Rebbe in this yeshiva who told me the following story. He said he was, it was on Shabbos, and he was staying in one area, and he had to walk to another area, and there was no houses in between. It was like kind of a country road, and it was around Rosh Chodesh, and there was a blackout, and it was pitch black. Totally black. There was no electric lights, there was no moon, and there was no houses which were giving light from anything on the side. Pitch black. And he could see kind of in front of his feet, right? And he was able to like move his feet and feel to make sure he was still on the road, and he knew he was on the right road. So there was nothing actually to be scared of. Nothing could go wrong here. But he said he felt petrified. And he was utterly scared. Even though there's no reason really to be scared, because, you know, he just carries on the road and everything's fine. If a car would come, then, you know, he'll be able to see. Everything will be fine. I'll go to the side. And he was trying to, like, think to himself, like, why am I so scared? What's going on? And he realized, and this is very profound, he realized that whenever he would walk normally, he would distract himself by looking at this and looking at that and noticing here, noticing there, and kind of remaining in an external world to some degree. Look at this, look at that, what's going on here and there. And this was the first time really ever he'd had to confront, there's nothing external to get involved in. And he had to think inner thoughts. And he was scared. The same exact story happened to Rav Tversky, Alav Hashalom. I don't know if you've read this book. There's a book, it's on the shelf over here. I'll look at him and I'll see what it's called. It's one of the first books that he wrote, that he said he went for a medical treatment, and they said that he had to go to a hot bath. And he went to this hot bath, and he was there for a little bit of time, and he wanted to come out. And they said, no, you have to stay for health properties, you have to stay for a certain period of time, and you haven't finished that time yet. And the same thing happened to him, where he suddenly felt this panic of, well, what am I going to think about now? And he couldn't think about Torah, and he didn't have anything particularly in his mind to think about, and he had to just think about himself, and who am I, and what am I doing, and he had this panic. And that, he says, that's what brought him onto the whole topic of self-awareness and self-esteem. Like his major topic, you know, we spoke about that the last few days, about like your topic. So Rabbi Tversky's topic was self-esteem. That was his topic. And he said that came from this being in this hot bath, where he had to suddenly face himself. And it's something which is uncomfortable for many people, because people like to just kind of go with the flow and not to think in depth. And everything seems to be working out. It was on the same topic. Years and years ago, there was a boy here who had OCD. And it was at a level which he could function, but there were certain quirks, things that were off here and there. Washing his hands was a major thing. Like if he would touch something, he would go wash his hands. Like just touch the table. In the middle of Seder, he would pause, go wash his hands, come back. There were other couple of things, but he was able to function normally. His father came to visit. His father was a Gaon Olam. His father is a surgeon who learns Bi'iyun 2 hours every morning from 5 till 7. And when he came here, he had He had his ritzvah and his tosefta. He came to learn, and he was lining up things which are unbelievable. I was blown away. Like that the concept of someone who's koveh itim la Torah, I'd never seen anything like this boy's father. And so I wanted to have a private discussion with the father about the son, like to how to help him, like to become more emotionally healthy. So the father said to me something very profound. The father said to me, they worked with him a lot, and the way it works with OCD is, when they get to a level which they're comfortable with, and they feel that it's working, there's nothing in the world you can do to help them. Because in their terms, they're doing okay. And even if you show them that you're not doing okay, look, your life could be much richer, you could develop much more, you could be much happier, but they find that they have an inner balance which they're comfortable with, and they're not willing to change. And the only time they'll change is where it's affecting their ability to function. If they have some goal they want to do in life, and they're not able to because the OCD is getting away, then they'll be willing to change in that area. But they won't be willing to change something which is working for them, even though it's they're suffering to some degree. But they'll make it work. So this particular boy wanted to do well in school. And part of his OCD is smoke. Someone smoking around him, he can't be there. But he had to be in a class with a teacher who smoked. They didn't smoke in the class, but they would come smelling of smoke. And he had to be in that class, and he didn't want to miss that class. So he found a way to overcome that particular way. But he used to buy, like, you know, these things that you open and you put the sticks in? So, you know, and they make a nice smell. So he would buy three or four of them, and he would come in before the teacher, and he would sit right at the back, and he would put them all around him. And then he would be in the classroom, and he would have these things surrounding him. And then he would wait till the teacher left, and a little bit after the teacher left, then he would go and he would... And so he had a system, and it worked for him. Because that was something which he really wanted to be successful. Well, and Kodesh Baruch Hu send the Yeshua. All those of you. She's about to get bigger. So just finishing the story. So that story. That story is an example of when a person has to face their real self, where it affects them. Everyone's in? That we just told that story just to give an example of where a person has a world of their inner world they don't want to face. They'll be forced to face it on a certain level to have to function. And therefore every person of course is going to develop and understand themselves to a level which they'll be able to function in the world. But as much as they can remain external and they don't have to look deeper, they'll be satisfied with that. And every person will continue to live their life on a superficial level to some degree. That's what happens when there's a red alert. It makes that It's good to laugh. It's good to laugh. It releases the tension. Kulanu tirudim ba'olam ha'maaseh. We all, our first level of functioning is to do what we have to be doing. And you know, it could come a yontif. Let's say the Shavuot is coming up next week. And Shavuot is a harder example. But a yontif is coming, and people want to be thinking about the yontif. So they get really, really involved in the yontif. But what level do they get involved in? Let's talk about sukkahs for a minute. They get involved in buying the lulav and esrog, and which lulav and esrog they're going to buy. They get involved in the sukkah and the decorations and how to put it all together. And you know, for 2 weeks, that's the man. And the wife is involved in what recipe she's going to make and which meal she's going to make, which recipe. And for 2 weeks before, all they're thinking about is sukkahs. All they're thinking about is yontif. For Pesach, some people, since Chanukah, they're thinking about Pesach already. Like, how are we going to clean the house on every level? So if you ask, are you preparing for the Chag? Of course I'm preparing for the Chag. That's all that's on my mind. 2 weeks before, the night of yontif comes. You're sitting in the sukkah. You're sitting with the matzah in front of you. And you ask, have you prepared for the Chag? And you say, of course I have. Look how they clean the tables, look how clean the houses, look how everything's set up. And what about, like, what's the meaning of the day? What's the purpose of yontif? Not a thought. Not a thought. It could be that on one level, a person has been investing so much in preparing for yontif But on a deeper level of, why are we doing it? What's my connection with it? What's it all about? What is Hashem's goal in this whole Yontif? That could totally miss the mark. It could be totally ignored. So to say that a person is not thinking about what's important, you can't say that. Everyone thinks about what's important. But on what level? In that example of Yontif, everyone's thinking about Yontif. Everyone's preparing for Yontif. But we naturally take care of the things that are more external first. And that has to be that way. But it's very easy for us to get stuck on that level. We can be preparing for Shabbos and forget the next stage of why are we preparing for Shabbos? What is the purpose of Shabbos? So Muskal Rishon will tell us sheyesh la'arbot ma'asim bechol shitchei ha'chaim livnot velitzor ba'olam v'gam libanot emenu. So our first encounter, our first thought, our initial way of viewing the world will be do more actions, do more. I remember once I was talking to someone. He's involved in Kiruv. And he's so involved in Kiruv that he doesn't have, like, you look at his schedule. He's giving this shir at this time, and he's giving that course at that time, and he's helping these people with tefillah at this time. He has his whole schedule packed. And when you talk to him about Avodas Hashem, like, without joking, and it's sad, but he says, who has time for Avodas Hashem? I'm involved in, I have davening at this time, and I have a seder limit at this time, and I'm involved in Kiruv with this person that time. And he's doing all good all day. But when you ask about the Panemius and his inner world, he feels empty. He feels he's so involved in the external acts of Yiddishkeit, which he believes to be good, and if he has more time in his day, he will not open that time for Hitbonanut, for thinking about what's the purpose of it all, what's the meaning behind it, why am I doing what I'm doing? Because he has this tension of doing more. He has this pressure that he puts on himself of doing more and more and more for the sake of Hashem. And that's what we feel. When you want to do more for Hashem, there's two levels you can go. You can go out or you can go down. When you want to do more for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do you do more hours and do more actions? Or do you think more deeply about why I'm doing what I'm doing? So when a person is coming to Daven Shmona Asrei, for example, right? So he could think, I want to do more for Hashem, so I'll Daven Shmona Asrei fast. And that way I'll have plenty of time in Kerem B'Yavneh between the finishing of Shmona Asrei until Chazat Hashad starts. And I have a Seder, Derech Hashem, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Chazor HaVekiyos. I can get in so much in between when I finish my quick Shmona Asrei and I start Chazat Hashad, then you know I can get a lot more done. And that's true, because you want to do more. But on the other hand, what if you daven much slower and you have more Kavana by understanding what you're saying as you go through davening? So some people could feel, no, that's a waste of time, because I can get more accomplished. And that's our initial response always. We'll always think, I want to do more. And we think on a surface level, do more, meaning accomplish more in the olam ha-ma'aseh, in the physical world. And what the Ali Shor here is pleading to us, is that if you want to do more, but do more depth. Do more inner. You don't have to change the external actions. You can do the same external actions. And when you ask yourself, and you hear the inner plea of the neshama, saying do more, then do more depth. Yesh la'arbot ha-ma'asim, livnot u'livanot, litbases, ulam ha-ma'amin ha-ma'amik, chayav litbonen. An external, Oved Hashem, will say, when he hears the plea of the neshama to do more, will do more external. However, someone who's got depth, and they believe in Hashem, the way they'll view it is, halo borei olam, manhiget olam, v'hu kol yachol, v'lo nivtzar imenu la'avil olamo, lidei tudato, gam biladei ma'aseinu. Hashem can manage all those external acts. He can find a way. But He wants me to be doing in depth. He wants me to be doing what I'm doing really. He doesn't want me to be doing... That means you can go out? No. Anyone who wants to leave, as far as I'm concerned, is able to leave. No, it's been 10 minutes. It's been enough time. Lama efo ha-ma'asim, I efshar limtso otam acher rak zeh. Our goal here isn't just to accomplish more externally. Our goal is shleimus. And shleimus means when you're doing what you do it thoroughly. You don't have to do more. Don't do a half job and many actions. Rather do less thoroughly. And that's a halacha right near the beginning of the Shulchan Aruch when it speaks about saying slichus or saying tachanunim. It says it's better to say less with kavana, with understanding, than to say more. That would certainly be true if a person now during this time would see that there's a lot going on and we need extra ma'asim, and he says, I'm going to say Tehillim every day. And there's a choice. You could either say 10 prakim of Tehillim every day, or you could say one perek of Tehillim slowly and understand everything you're saying. So the Shulchan Aruch's injunction to you is, rather say less tachanunim with understanding, with depth, than just to get more in, but you don't really understand what you're saying. It could be true for a daily tachanun as well. Daily tachanun, if you could finish and rush through, but you won't understand a clue of what you're saying, or slichas as well, when it's time of slichas, you could rush through but don't understand what you're saying, it's better to say it slowly with understanding, because our goal is not more actions. Our goal is shlemus. V'shlemut masigim rak al yedei ma'asim, v'dafka b'ma'asim chayav letapech olamo apnimi. Of course, you can only achieve perfection when you do actions. You can't be in theory disconnected from the world. But also, when doing actions, you have to be involved. It's not that your external sense of self is doing action, but your inner self. But often, shema'asav yechazeku et pnimiyotav. You have to be doing actions in a way which strengthens your inner world. And I'll finish with one last idea. There's a famous idea of the... It's written in many places, but it's most famously attributed to Sefer HaChinuch. That the external actions that you do change your inner world. And someone could tell you, you know, in my school, they forced me to do this and this and this and this and this. And not only do I not enjoy doing it, but now I've been so upset by it, and I'm so fed up of it, I never want to do it ever again in my life. So does it work? One of my wife's uncles, Alav Shalom, he, when he was in the war, and they only had potatoes to eat. Potatoes. By the time the war finished, he took a vow, I don't know if he did it with Shem Hashem or not, he's never going to eat a potato again. What do you mean? Sefer HaChinuch. It says if you do something many times, then that becomes second nature to you, and it becomes accustomed to you, and it becomes part of your world. So what's pshat? There are certain actions that you do that make you feel more of an affinity towards and affect your inner world, and certain actions that you do that's the opposite. What's the difference? Your kavana. If when you're doing an act of chesed, you're forced to do it, and your mindset is, I wish I didn't have to do this, then as you're doing it, you feel more bitter towards it, and the more you do it, the more you hate it. And by the time you finish, you take a vow never to do it again. If you do an action with the goal and the desire and the will that you want your inner world to align with this as well, you don't feel like doing chesed now, but you know it's important. So you say, Hashem, I'm going to do this chesed now. Please help me, Hashem, be more of a baal chesed, that I'll feel this is important. And you go and do the act of chesed with the desire that you will feel and be sensitive towards that. And you do it, you'll become more sensitive to it. So just be very careful. If any of you are ever involved in chinuch, or even with your own children, it's counterproductive to force a child to do an action again and again where you know they don't want to do it, with the Sefer HaChinuch in mind, saying, well, if I force them enough times, they'll want to do it too. That won't work. That will be counterproductive. They'll grow up saying, I don't want to do this anymore. But if you show them why it's important, and you encourage them to do it, then even if you force them to do it by, you know, setting up a system whereby they're going to have to do it, but you're always showing them how that's going to build their inner world, and how long term they're going to love doing this, and they're going to benefit from doing this, and you show them to the point where they say, you know, Dad, I'd really rather not do it, but I see why it's worthwhile. That's where they come from. They get the understanding that even though I don't really want to do it, but I see that it's beneficial, and they do it from that mindset, then they'll do it, and they'll be happy they're doing it. That, you know, they may have said, I would rather not do it, but I'm going to do it now because I understand that it's important. And then as they do it more and more, they'll develop it. So that's an example of, it's not enough to be doing the action, but you have to do the action with the mindset of shlemus. If you have in mind that I'm doing this action in order to come close to Hashem, in order to perfect myself, then the doing of the action will have a profound effect on you. But just doing the action externally, more and more and more and more actions, won't necessarily get you at your goal of closeness with Hashem. Yishar koch.
Eventful shoot.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I was listening to